Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Tuesday, the 23rd of August, year 2011. Jeff Pound with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about Saturday's Food Festival with guest Ava Bornstein from the Juneau Economic Development Council and also Darren Snyder from the Cooperative Extension Service. We'll talk with Eric Boris from TrailMix about Thursday's benefit dance and we'll celebrate the first day of school with Superintendent Glenn Gilbrick. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, showers with high temperatures around 56 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two state lawmakers are throwing their support behind a pair of Oklahoma tribes suing over water rights. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the legislators represent the tribe's area.
The Choctaw and Chickasaw Nations are asking a federal court to stop the sale or export of water from Sardis Lake in southeast Oklahoma unless they're part of any water rights agreement. The tribes filed a lawsuit late last week against Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon, the state's Water Resources Board, and others. Fallon has said the lawsuit is not helpful to Oklahoma, but State Senator Susan Paddock, a Democrat, and State Representative Todd Thompson, a Republican, say the tribes have a right to be included in discussions over what happens to the water in the lake. Oklahoma law prohibits the sale of water outside the state, and Texas is suing to force its sale to its growing cities. Chickasaw Governor Bill Anitubby and Choctaw Nation Chief Gregory Pyle both say other governments ignored their tribes, so they had no choice but to sue. The tribes say the 1830 Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek gave them ownership of water rights in southeast Oklahoma in exchange for tribal lands in Mississippi. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Norman, Oklahoma.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development announces more than $15 million in awards to improve housing and spur economic development among tribes. Dareth Watchman Moore, regional administrator with HUD, says 26 tribes or tribal communities in 10 states will receive the funding. She says tribes receive 55% of the nearly $30 million from the Competitive Rural Innovation Fund to address rural housing problems nationwide.
Because there's a no one-size-fit-all approach to strengthening rural communities and tribal communities, this funding is designed to be fairly flexible to address either housing or economic development needs or both.
Watchman Moore lists some examples, like an Alaska village receiving a grant to train a workforce in green energy for new construction. A nonprofit in California will use its funding to relocate surplus military housing to a Montana reservation. And a New Mexico housing authority is getting a grant to reduce dilapidated, overcrowded housing.
Indian country, in terms of housing, there's a tremendous amount of need just because of the high poverty rate, the high unemployment rate. And so when I say high, we're talking three times more than the national average for poverty and or unemployment. And therefore, all of that goes hand in hand. So we're dealing with a significant issue of poverty and distressed housing conditions.
HUD Secretary Sean Donovan made the major grant announcement today with tribal leaders in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency makes an agreement with the Department of the Interior to resolve violations of its schools in Indian Country. The settlement will strengthen public health and environmental protection and improve environmental management. The EPA announced Monday the settlement for alleged violations of waste, water, air, toxics, and community right-to-know laws at schools and public water systems. The settlement will include the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Indian Education correcting alleged violations at 72 schools and 27 water systems. The settlement comes after EPA inspections of more than 100 BIA/BIE schools. During this week in 1983, the Cook Inlet Tribal Council was established in Alaska. It provides social education and employment services to Alaska Natives and Native Americans living in the Cook Inlet region. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxby, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05, and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on the Juneau Afternoon, where our first guests are here to talk about the food festival, which is coming up this Saturday, the 27th, from 9 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. From the Juneau Economic Development Council, Ava Bornstein, and also Darren Snyder from the Cooperative Extension Service. Thank you very much for coming down the station.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks.
So tell me about the food festival, Ava, if you could please. The background, why is it happening, and how did it start?
It's the fourth year for the Juneau Local Foods Festival. And when it started 4 years ago, it was the idea that came out of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability that Juneau should have a venue for buying food and looking at products that are made locally, artisan food products. And we didn't have one here, so we started a one-day event. And we were very anxious on that one day to see if the Juneau community would show up to shop local, and we were surprised, I think beyond our wildest dreams, that we had about 1,500 community members come in to shop local. So we knew we were on to something here in town, an unmet need. So we, the second year, we had our festival again, and again we had a great turnout, and that's the point at which we decided it was time for a weekly summer farmers market in Juneau. So last year, we combined with the artist market that had also been started recently at the Jack on the summer weekends and had an artists and farmers market that was really well received to the point that we're back again. We were back again this summer with the one change that the weather in Juneau is not the best for an outdoor farmers market, weekly farmers market. So we last year had a Saturday market, but this year but if we moved it to a Sunday market, which we did, we could go inside on Sundays at the Jack, which we couldn't do on Saturdays because the building is usually occupied for some event. So this year we renamed our farmers market the Sunday market and had a weekly Sunday market, and that culminates in the food festival, the Juneau Local Foods Festival, which is what's coming up this Saturday. And again, I just want to emphasize it's not on Sunday when we've had our weekly markets, but it's on Saturday, and it's a bigger festival event. And it's bigger in terms of the number of vendors that we have, and it's also bigger because we incorporate workshops that are free to the community, as is the event, free to the community. And we incorporate an Ask the Experts help desk in, or help corner, I should say, in this Saturday event. So that's kind of the history of it and where we've evolved to today.
Why do you think it's important, and why do you think it's been so successful?
Well, I think it's been both important and successful because Juneau, just like other communities, is very sustainable-minded and is looking for local options for eating local and looking for locally grown fresh food. As you know, we all know that all our food is flown in or barged in, and it's been picked quite a while ahead of time for our produce. So it's a great opportunity, and certainly people have shown that they're very enthusiastic about freshly grown and freshly harvested food available in Juneau.
Darren?
Yeah, I'm really excited about specifically the local foods festival here at the end of the season, but also just that we are being so successful as a community to support our local growers and people who are interested in developing small businesses and to keep our keep our dollars local and to try and really support our local economy, our local entrepreneurs, and while at the same time the buyers are benefiting, as Ava said, from this fresh produce, which is of higher nutritive value and just tastes better, so people are more likely to eat it. And so it's really a win-win proposition.
Why is it of higher nutritive value?
In time, vegetables do lose some of their vitamins and as they degrade, and then they just don't last as long in your fridge, and so they're more likely to go to spoil as well.
So the more fresh your vegetable is, the better it is for you.
Yeah.
Cool. What can people expect to see this Saturday when they walk into the Juneau Arts and Culture Center?
Yeah, what I want to say is that not only will they see fresh harvested vegetables or things like that, but there also are vendors there that will be selling some of our local artisan foods, such as Wild Oven will be there with their with his breads, and Chef Steph will be there with her baked specialties. And there's going to be lots of jams and jellies that are made with locally harvested fruits. And we'll also have some Devil's Club products and salves made of herbal salves made of products from our forests here, rainforest products. So we've got a great variety of booths for shopping. And then we've got, as I say, the workshops that we have. And the workshops this year are going to be, our first one in the morning is on raising chickens. And we've got Mark Wheeler and Joy Lyon talking about that. Then we've got our expert, community expert, Ed Byarski, who's going to be talking about growing cruciforms, which, as I learn, is members of the broccoli family. We've got another workshop on defeating invasive weeds with Dana White. And then our preeminent organic grower, Joe Orsi, who's always been a favorite at the market each year in terms of buying garlic and potatoes, is going to be giving a seminar on growing organic fruits and veggies in Southeast. And then Darren here will be talking about how to build a root cellar. So you want to say more about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And now storing your vegetables over the winter has been a long-lasting pursuit of people, and it, less so in more recent decades. But it's a time-proven method to spend no electricity, but end up with being able to make best use of the products that are available in the fall, but then not locally available throughout the season. And there are ways that you can do it right or not right, depending on where and how you design it. There are a lot of moisture considerations, temperature considerations, and so I just like to kind of give people some tips on how people are doing it elsewhere in Alaska and how they can potentially locate and build one for themselves.
Food festival happens this Saturday from 9 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. Is it free?
It's free, and the one last thing is that they're going to be an Ask the Experts corner, and Darren could talk a little bit about that, too.
Yeah, so we do have many experts in town here, and I'm tapping as many as I can, and so if you're out there and you'd like to share, please look me up. My phone number is 796-6281, and give me a call, and I'd love to schedule you in to sit in and help folks out. So we'll have some different. I'm envisioning some name tags for people so that others can identify them, so that they're open to answering questions about how to grow things and what to do with things that are growing that they don't want, and all those different aspects. But I have a feeling the room's going to be full of various experts, and we're trying to kind of congregate a lot of them into a certain area so that when all that jawing is going on, then that we kind of keep it in a certain area. So come over and ask an expert.
All right. What kind of future plans do you have for the farmers market or the Saturday market?
We have plans to continue the Sunday market on Sundays. And actually this year we had another community member step up and open a Saturday market in the Valley one Saturday a month. So we're looking towards the community to grow this into more farmers markets in Juneau, and several community gardens have been opening up, so I think there's a good movement to eat local going here.
I've been talking to Darren Snyder and Eva Bornstein about the food festival, which is happening this Saturday. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
Just that the sponsors for this are the Juneau Economic Development Council, the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, the Cooperative Extension Service, and also Slow Foods Southeast, and they have been working with the speakers and the workshops this year for us. So I want to thank all the sponsors and helping organize this year.
All right, well, thank you very much for coming by.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
If I were an apple, I'd be very unhappy traveling 4,000 miles or more. From far off Tasmania in a shipping container to a shelf in a New Jersey store. Why should I be tortured when some New Jersey orchard would be totally thrilled to the core? To pick me and crate me and load me and freight me, not 4,000 miles but 4. An apple should be not far from the tree where it ripens in the fall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. If I were a berry, I expect I'd be very contrary and hardly inclined to get shipped out from Chile to a store in North Philly. Hey, I'd have to be out of my mind. It seems paradoxic in carbon dioxide that we force all our food to commute, wasting gallons of fuel, which we know isn't cool for people or planets or fruit. A berry is fine, not far from its vine, near the farmer's market stall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Yeah. Might want to take home. Do not buy for your table till you check out the label and determine how far it did roam. Aside from the karma of helping the farmer who lives in your county or state, there is one more good reason to buy what's in season. The taste is incredibly great. So keep buying foods from regional dudes. Keep your carbon footprint small. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Good, good, good for us all.
The music of Tom Chapin. The time is 3:19 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Here on a Juneau afternoon, our next guest is Eric Boris from Trail Mix. Here having a fundraiser this Thursday from a group called Dead Man Winter. Eric, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, for people who don't know, tell me about Trail Mix, please.
Trail Mix is a nonprofit that's devoted to building and maintaining trails in Juneau. It's an interesting environment around here. We have a lot of different landowners, and by being a nonprofit, we can work on Forest Service, state, and city land without having to negotiate too much.
And this fundraiser coming up this Thursday is put on by a group called Land Locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of guys. What you want to hear when you're a nonprofit. Some guys called Trail Mix this winter and said, we want to bring a band to town. We want them to do a benefit concert for you. And they've done 90% of the work. It's been great. So yeah, this band, Dead Man Winter, it features, I think, actually don't quote me on this, but several of the members of the band Trampled by Turtles that came last year and did a benefit for the Watershed Partnership, I believe. And it was a great show, sold out. There was, the band said they'd never seen, they never had a response like they did in Juno. There's people taking their shoes off and pounding on the stage for an encore. So they had a good time. They wanted to come up again, and this time they're coming up as a different incarnation of most of the same people, so it should be a good show.
What time does it start?
It starts at 8, and actually there's a miscommunication at some point in the process, so there's posters that say 7, and there's posters that say 8, but the doors open at 8, and the band comes on at 9, so we'll be doing some trail trivia beforehand, we're giving away some prizes, and talking about how great all the trails are around here, thanking a lot of our sponsors.
Speaking about trails, can you tell me about some of your current projects?
Yeah, we're putting some bridges in on the Under Thunder Trail, these nice, beautiful cedar bridges, and they're weathering the recent rains pretty well. And we've got a crew out on the Montana Creek Trail, the section between Back Loop Road and the Brotherhood Bridge Trail, doing some reroutes there, which is another area that had some pretty severe washouts earlier in the year, so we're rerouting around those, and it's gonna be a lot better.
You mentioned bear trails. Is there any bears on the trail?
We don't see that many. We generally have chainsaws going or equipment going, or we make a lot of noise, so we've been no bears this year.
What are some future projects you got going?
We've got gonna be doing some work on the Treadwell Ditch, and what else do we have? Next year, there's a big pot of city money to go work out on the Outer Point Trail. We're going to make that as nice as the Rainforest Trail that's right next to it, and we're going to tie them in together.
And when is the next volunteer opportunity? The
next one, we are having a volunteer day September 3rd. There was a large blowdown during the winter or early spring on the Windfall Lake Trail, just past Windfall Lake, that was actually the Montana Creek Trail, somewhere between 50 and 100 trees all just tangled up together. So the Forest Service is going out, I think the week before, and they're going to cut it all up. So we need some strong backs and some fast legs to get out there and help move all these logs off the trail. The Forest Service will do the cutting, and then we'll do the moving. And then we're going to meet at the Windfall Trail parking lot at 9 a.m. on September 3rd. That's a Saturday. And it's quite a hike out there, so whoever comes, be prepared for a long hike and a hard day, and bring rain gear and food.
How about gloves?
And gloves. And we'll provide hard hats and tools.
In the meantime, you'll be seeing this Thursday. How can people get tickets?
Tickets are available at the Jack, and they'll also be available at the door. We're only taking cash because it just saves us trouble. And tickets are $20, and it's a 21 and over show because there'll be beer served there.
All right, Eric Boris, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, but thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Here's a little sample of the group Dead Man Winter.
And the pain.
is the group Dead Man Winter. They'll be performing in a concert, a benefit concert for Trail Mix this Thursday. The band starts at 9 o'clock at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Tickets are available at the door.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 23rd of August, 2011. It was on this date, 1966, Lunar Orbiter 1 took the first photograph of the Earth from space. The purpose was to take pictures of the moon's surface so that scientists could scout potential landing sites for the Apollo missions. And they did. They got images of about 99% of the lunar surface. And on August 23rd, just as Orbiter 1 was about to pass behind the moon, mission controllers sent the command to change the angle of the cameras so they were pointing at the Earth. And they managed to capture Earth's first portrait, a silvery, cloud-swirled crescent, bluish, rising over the moon's pockmarked face. It's the birthday of Edgar Lee Masters, born Garnet, Kansas, 1868. Grew up in Illinois, and though he became a lawyer in Chicago, Masters' dream was to write a novel about the small-town Illinois of his childhood. Instead, he wrote it as a collection of poems, actually a series of monologues set in a graveyard, spoken by about 200 dead citizens of an imaginary town he based on Lewiston, Illinois, and nearby Petersburg. The book was published in 1915, Spoon River Anthology. It's one of the most popular books of poetry in American history. But people in those small towns were upset because Masters had based many of his characters directly on people there and hadn't even changed their last names. The critic Amy Lowell wrote, Spoon River is one long chronicle of rapes, seductions, liaisons, and perversions. It's the birthday of the English playwright Willie Russell, born in Whiston, just outside Liverpool, 1947. Went to see the Beatles perform at the Cavern Club in Liverpool. He said they were like Martians walking onto the stage, dressed all in black, with their hair combed forward. He wrote a play about the Beatles, John, Paul, George, Ringo, and Bert, a big hit in the West End. Also wrote Educating Rita and Shirley Valentine, and his musical Blood Brothers has been running in the West End since 1983. And it was on this date in 1305, William Wallace was executed for treason in London, Scottish national hero, who, when King Edward I of England declared himself the ruler of Scotland, Wallace assembled an army of commoners and landowners, outfought the English army, captured Stirling Castle, then led an ill-advised attack on the English at the Battle of Falkirk. Wallace went into exile in France, dropped out of sight, finally was arrested by the English in Glasgow in 1305, taken to London to stand trial. He argued that because he had never sworn allegiance to Edward, therefore he could not have committed treason against him, but he was convicted nonetheless, and he was dragged behind a horse to the execution site, hanged until nearly dead, cut down and disemboweled. William Wallace, 1305. Here's a poem by Wendell Berry. I go by a field where once I cultivated a few poor crops. It is now covered with young trees, for the forest that belongs here has come back and reclaimed its own. And I think of all the effort I have wasted, and all the time, and of how much joy I took in that failed work, and how much it taught me. For in so failing, I learned something of my place, something of myself, and now I welcome back the trees. By Wendell Berry, from his longer poem Leavings, published by Counterpoint Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by our technical director, Thomas Schweitzer. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Are you considering other educational options for your student? Then consider HomeBridge, a program that builds the link between school and home. HomeBridge allows up to 2 classes at local high schools with no allotment reduction and makes sports, theater, and other activities possible within the Juneau School District. HomeBridge offers parents a direct educational connection with their K-12th grader. Call HomeBridge at 209-HOME today for more information.
This is Bird Note. A 16-inch pileated woodpecker is hammering its massive chisel of a bill against a cedar trunk, making large rectangular incisions, some nearly a foot long. This carpenter seeks out another. Within the trunk swarm many thousands of carpenter ants. The half-inch-long black ants have themselves excavated a nesting colony in the heart of the living tree. The woodpecker's sticky tongue reaches 5 inches beyond the tip of the bill into the trunk, lapping up hundreds of ants. More than half of the pileated's entire food intake may be ants. Woodpeckers as a group eat far more ants than do most birds, swallowing them whole. Many other vertebrates studiously avoid ants because of their stings or noxious chemical deterrents, like formic acid. Another member of the woodpecker family, the northern flicker, is known to have ingested over 5,000 ants in one sitting. While the pileated woodpecker and northern flicker also eat a variety of other insects and berries, they always love to have a good supply of ants. Writers for Bird Note include Bob Sundstrom, Francis Wood, Ellen Blackstone, and Todd Peterson. Our producer is John Kessler. Executive producer is Chris Peterson. I'm Michael Stein.
Time is 3:34. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. The Wednesday hike for tomorrow will be the Treadwell Ditch Trail starting at Eagle Crest. They'll park at the Lower Nordic Loop parking area and hike down the ditch as far as they want. They'll have lunch and then return to the cars. Group and weather will determine the length and final destination. You should wear appropriate footwear, warm layers of clothing, and bring plenty of food and water. Meet at the Eagle Crest parking lot on Douglas Island at about 9:30 in the morning. No docks or firearms, please, and they say carpooling is encouraged. music from Ry Cooter. The time is 3:39, and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Today, for most students in Juneau, it was the first day of school. In the studio with me today is Glenn Gelbrick, Superintendent of Schools. Glenn, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thanks.
So how many students do we have, how many teachers do we have, and what kind of staff do we have?
Well, I think we have the enrollment count is just under 4950. And I think staff-wise, we have about 700, 750 staff. A majority of those are teachers. We're ready to go.
I noticed couple of years ago you had the phrase connect. Do you have a phrase this year?
Each one, everyone.
That's what I read on the flyer that got mailed to most parents in town. What is that? Can you elaborate on that?
Well, fundamentally, the idea that we have, we started with connect 2 years ago with the idea that in order to help students be successful in school and to help more of our students graduate, the first thing we had to do was to establish a connection with them. Last year, we talked about creating Graduate Starts With Me, which builds on that theme of needing to make a connection with kids. And this year, we're continuing that theme with the idea that at the end of the year, we want each student, every student, to be walking across the stage.
What could a parent do to stimulate success in their child?
I think it's mostly just demonstrate an interest in what they're doing, demonstrate an interest in how they're doing in school, what they feel like their successes are, get the kids to talk about their experience. So we're hearing interest, and it's really conversation, which does two things. One, it builds language, and the second is it demonstrates interest. In the process of doing that, I think it's important for us to help kids actually acknowledge their successes, to remember that there are so many ways in which they are successful, because it's easy to measure the things that we aren't successful at.
In general, how are the schools doing?
I think we're doing well. We are seeing positive gains against national standards in both mathematics and language arts. Obviously, in both cases, when we get to 100%, we'll all pat each other on the back and say we're done. But in the meantime, I think we want to celebrate progress. Our graduation rate is back up again this year above what it was. And so lots of indicators that our kids are being successful, and kudos to our teachers for making that happen.
Is there most need for improvement?
Probably in the area of math. Across the board, we've got about 60% or so of our students who are meeting the national expectations, and we would like it to be higher than that.
How about drug testing?
Going well. Our student athletes are entering their third year of mandatory drug testing. The program has produced a very small number, small enough that we can't actually give the number without violating a student's privacy rights, but a very, very small number of students who have tested positive, and according to people who are working directly with kids, it's a completely different conversation among kids right now.
How do you walk the fine line between school spirit and also school rivalry?
Well, that's going to be a great question. Thunder Mountain and Juneau Douglas High School share athletes who have grown up together. I mean, they literally in Juneau, you can start participating in some sort of organized activity at a very young age before you even come to the public school system. And so that's actually an advantage that the student athletes we have who compete against one another actually had friendships long before they were competing against one another. And it's been a real healthy, positive thing. We were at the football game last Friday night, at Thunder Mountain, and there were lots and lots of JDHS students there and lots of exchange, positive exchange between JDHS students and Thunder Mountain students, all rooting for Thunder Mountain.
There's a story in the paper this morning about a freshman giving some advice to teachers. What kind of things do you have to do to stimulate success in teachers as well as the students?
Well, I think the same thing is to get connected to them, understand their work, and to be really clear about how much you appreciate the work that they do. Teaching is a a very demanding professional level job, and it's important for us to acknowledge teachers for what they do, to talk about the successes that they've had, and our teachers are having successes, but also to give them opportunities to learn and to refine their craft in the classroom.
This is your third year on the job?
It is.
Do you think it'd last this long?
I was hoping, sure. I made a commitment to the board at the time we were having the conversation that I'd be more than willing to serve for 5 years, and beyond that, it's up to them.
What kind of things have you learned in these 2.5 years so far?
I think that there is more potential. When I came here, I came because I thought there was a potential in Juneau for us to truly have the greatest level of success for our kids, because we have such support in the community for what we're doing, that we really do have the ability to come around kids and support them to new levels of success. I thought that as a newcomer, and everything I've learned in the last 2 years supports that, and actually I think it's better than I thought.
This may sound like the same question, but it's a little bit different. What can the community do to stimulate success? And you can't say connect.
I think get involved. Get involved in the schools. Come out to a ball game. Come out to a speech contest. Notice when kids are in robot leagues. Come to school and sign up to be a tutor. Any way that you can, and not the least of which is when you see a student, say hello. Just start the conversation.
Talk about School View for a minute, please.
School View is a basically it's an alert outlet. Kristen Bartlett, our communications manager, when we have information that goes out into that we think is worth sharing, there are people who have signed up or subscribed to this, and it's basically an email alert that says, hey, this is something that's going on at school. It could be good news. It could be a weather alert. It could be any number of things. But it comes directly from her office, and it typically comes before most media deadlines and those kinds of things. So it's kind of, if you care enough to know, we'll get you the information as early as possible. It's an email thing, and if people are interested in subscribing to that, it doesn't cost anything, and you can look on the website. We'll have it posted on the website how you can sign up for that. It's very, very easy.
More than a couple of years ago, we had to people had to listen to Morning Edition to find out if the schools are going to be open due to a bus trouble during the winter. But Kristen seems to call up everybody in the school district very quickly and say that whether it's a weather day or not.
We do put out a phone message that goes out to families for that, and it goes out to staff for that. I would venture to say there are still people who get up and listen to Morning Edition to find out.
Tell me about the school summit, which is coming up in the near future.
We started a thing last year where it's a message about the state of the schools and where we are. It's a brief presentation that we make for the community, and then we break out into school-based presentations where leadership in each of the schools is talking about the status of the school and the kinds of things that are going on there. It all is at Thunder Mountain, starts at 6 o'clock this Thursday. I hope people can come.
What kind of feedback do you get from the public and the teachers and the students about what you might be needing to do as a superintendent of schools?
Well, I think the number one feedback I get is, boy, there's a lot of change. There are a lot of things that are new. I think we hear people noticing that what we're doing is more systemic than it was. It's more tightly coupled than it was. We're still trying to be very tightly coupled around the idea of what we're trying to accomplish, and at the same time honor that teachers have different ways they can achieve those goals, and to honor that.
I've been talking to Glenn Gilbert, superintendent of schools, about the first day of school. How's it been going today so far?
Oh, just been a great day. We were out and about in schools. I think I visited 5 schools this morning. It's a great day to be in schools. Everyone is smiling. Kids are happy to see their teachers. Teachers happy to see kids. Kids happy to see other kids. I talked with some second graders today, and they were just delighted about the opportunity to see friends they haven't seen all summer. I think the thing that sticks out for me is as the most impressive thing that happened today, and there was lots of good stuff to report today, But the staff and the community of Gastineau Elementary School, as the construction project is winding up there, it's not quite on schedule. And yet that community, starting with the staff and the school leadership there, has really come around. And so when you walk in the school, it's hard to tell. It's, many of the cabinets aren't there yet. Many of the little places for kids to hang their coats, not quite there yet. And still you walk in and it is a beautiful setting. And it's only the first of the 3 years of the renovation. It's a pretty happy place this morning.
What other kinds of needs are there as far as the school's buildings are concerned?
Well, I think that, you know, we want to finish up the work that we're doing at Gastineau. So next year we'll rebuild the commons area where students eat lunch. We'll open that space up so it'll be lighter, airier for the kids and staff there. The next project, which was just approved for the ballot in October, is out at Auk Bay to get that started. That project will get under serious way here in next summer. And then obviously we also on the agenda last night with the assembly, they approved a ballot measure for October to replace the turf field at Adair Kennedy.
Seems like you're one step closer to that.
We are one step closer to that. Now we just need the community support for it, and it'll happen.
Glenn Gilbert, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, just we're happy to work in such a great community, and anytime the community wants to get involved, call us or call the school where you'd like to participate and raise your hand.
School is something we do from 8 to 3. While we're there, we study to the bone. When the day ends and we get ready to leave, teacher tells us one more thing. Pack your books, you better bring
homework. Homework. I'm not made for homework. You know, it makes me feel so bad. Spelling words and timetables, they make me feel so sad. I'm not made for homework. Oh, won't you listen to my plea? Take my math and science books and send them back.
After school, I kick back and recreate. I don't want my brain to overload. After dinner, TV can hardly wait. Then my fills my heart with gloom. March right up to your room.
Homework, homework. I'm not made for homework. You know, it makes me feel so bad. Spelling words and timetables, they make me feel so sad. I'm not made for homework. Take my math and science books and send them back through
history. Each day I hurry, can't be late for school. Bus driver, he never lets me down. I get there so to learn the rule. Teacher puts me on the spot, says she knows that I forgot.
Homework, homework. I'm not made for homework. You know it makes me feel so bad. Spelling words and timetables, they make me feel so sad. I'm not made for homework, oh, won't you listen to my plea? Take my math and science books and send them back through history.
Study to the bone. When the day ends and we get set to leave, teacher tells us one more thing. Pack your books, you better bring
homework. Homework. I'm not.
360 North at 8, learn about totems on Heartbeat Alaska. This week's Native Report follows at 8:30 with more news from Indian Country with Stacy Thunder and Tad Johnson. At 9, artists and students from the Lower Kuskokwim School District perform original songs, dramatic interpretations, and Yupik dances based on elders' recollections of Alaska at the time of statehood, on celebrating statehood tundra style. All tonight on 360 North.
Juno's own singer-songwriter Buddy Tabor is performing in concert on Saturday, August 27th at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Empty words of promise.
Opening will be Jim and Martha Stagg. Don't miss this Alaska Folk Festival event, Buddy Tabor in concert on Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets are available at the door.
Singing sweetly over stone.
Music of cellist Sewell Bailey, who will be performing with the Wadajin Pratt this coming up Labor Day, Monday, September 5th. It's a concert brought to you by the Juno Jazz and Classics people. Tickets are available at the usual places. You're tuned to KTOO in Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO will also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An excursion inlet and icy straight here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow, 3 on a Juno afternoon, we'll find out about some upcoming advocacy workshops offered by AWARE. And Betty Kapler will be here to talk about this Saturday's fundraising dinner and auction for Helping Hands at the Valley Chapel Church. At Writer's Almanac Music Amore tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, continued rain, low temperatures around 30 to 50 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, showers with high temperatures around 56 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers. And Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you very much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. If you'd like to be on a Juno Afternoon or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. Have a great evening.